Mini episode 308 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 308. This is FDH Lounge managing partner Rick Morris here. We've got one of our favorite media guests on the lines with us today from Philadelphia, a gentleman who first started joining us when sportscasting from Fox 29 TV in Philadelphia. You can also check him out now on 97.5 The Fanatic in Philadelphia, one of the country's top sports talk radio stations. How can I possibly say that? How can I assert such a thing? Well, this is the station that brought Tony Bruno in from national broadcasting. He was doing a nationally syndicated show and quit that to join 97.5 in Philadelphia. So that shows you the prestige level of the station, and it's no surprise that our friend broadcasts with them because it is a great station and he is a great talent, and we're going to have a great conversation here today, as I overuse the word great, as I always do, in talking about the NFC East. Our good friend Joe Stasiak. Joe, real pleasure to have you here today. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, boy, Rick, that was some intro. I couldn't wait to hear who you were talking about. Who's this guy that's going to come on? And I was excited, but I'd hire that guy if I heard that kind of intro. No, I appreciate it, man. How are you? I'm trying to take Tony Bruno's job, by the way. He was in Manhattan Beach. He comes all the way out here. I want his old job out in Manhattan, Hermosa Beach. That's where I need to be. But right now I'm in Philly. Wouldn't rather be any place in the world right now because hey, all eyes on this Chip Kelly offense so far. Had a good time Monday night, and it's one of the few times I have ever said this, that the game or the event actually exceeded the hype that surrounded it. Usually, it's a little bit of a letdown, even if it's wonderful and dynamic and great. It never exceeds the hype, man. It blew the hype away, and that's all they're talking about. You know, the coronation has begun after basically 2.5 quarters of offense.
Well,
that's how they do in Philly. That's how they do in Philly.
I was looking at the 97.5 Facebook page, and there were fans on there that were even saying, hey, let's dial it down a little bit. It's one game. I mean, the hype in town must be amazing if the fans are saying, hey, you know, wait and see, because it generally doesn't take a lot for the people of Philadelphia to get too riled up about something, does it?
No. Well, here's the thing. First of all, it's well into Chargers week, but they're still kind of coming off the Washington game. So for the first 3 or 4 days, I mean, you know, they're trying to, like, you know, how many Lombardi trophies can we fit in the NovaCare complex, the practice facility? You know, for the first 3 or 4 days, I was fortunate to get a couple shifts this week. I'm trying to, like, you know, be the voice of reason, which is, you know, not really synonymous with me, but I'm trying to, like, pull them back a little bit, you know, just kind of, it was fun. I get it. It was cool. But even like the pundits and the so-called experts, and Adam Schefter now has the birds in their power rankings, has him jumping to number 5, and, you know, Herm Edwards is all over him, and John Gruden, the offensive guru and, you know, coaching genius and, you know, the big-time quarterback coach, I mean, he thought it would never work, and he was all over Chip Kelly's, you know, it was eye-popping, but, you know, it was 2.5 quarters, I get it, they pulled it, you know, took the foot off the pedal. Let's calm down. They won by 6 points, all right? This is the NFL. This isn't, you know, Oregon, you know, playing Appalachian State, you know, in September, you know, where they're up 50-7 at the half. It's one game. It was a good game. It went very smooth for his first outing. Let's see a little bit more of it. Let's see a little bit more of it. Chargers come in this week, and now, again, they're in another good spot for the Eagles, coming off a tough loss to Houston. I mean, they blew a 21-point lead. It's not a great Chargers team. They come all the way across country, have to play a 1 o'clock game, which is basically 10 o'clock their body time. And it's another good spot for the Birds. And the Birds really landed in a very good spot game one with a rusty RG3. And again, the defense It looked like they had no idea what hit him. I don't know if you saw shots of Jim Haslett, the defensive coordinator, in the box. He had no time to even, you know, he's like, all right, I guess for the next time there's a, you know, a few seconds in between a play, I'll send something in. But, I mean, he always looked like he's a walking mugshot anyway, but he looked baffled, and you saw guys, you know, faking the cramps and went after a while. And, you know, it was cool. But, you know, hey, it's one game. It's the National Football League. It's not the Pac-12. So, you know, we shall see.
Oh, exactly. And I'll tell you what, before we circle around to the rest of the division here, and we'll come full circle by coming back and talking about Philadelphia, one thing that kind of occurs to me about what's happened there and the start that Chip Kelly's gotten off to, I've been doing a lot of thinking recently here, doing coverage of this final half season of Breaking Bad for the show, and the thought about, you know, alternate universes. That show exists in an alternate universe where Walter White has decided to break bad cook meth and all these bad things happen from there. I'm thinking to myself on that whole sliding doors principle, because Chip Kelly almost ended up in Cleveland. And I'll tell you what, I try not to give into the fatalism. I really hate the phrase only in Cleveland. I don't believe in the supernatural as regards that kind of stuff, but I can't help but think in this alternate universe where Chip Kelly takes the Cleveland job, everybody gets injured right off the bat. He's immediately hated guy in town. I mean, this is a thing where there's a fine line between genius and insanity in what you're running. Yep. And in Philadelphia, it's all working out real well so far. But it's not hard to imagine him ending up in a place and the thing going completely haywire from the outset.
Sure. And you can, I mean, you could take almost any situation. Think about your life, Rick, my life. I mean, there's some decisions along the way, or sometimes if things fall into place or something happens, you don't realize it, you know. It just one, you know, small thing that would have made you go in a different direction could have changed the outcome in the course. But he declined initially. He went back to Oregon. And, of course, you know, they got hit with some sanctions, which were kind of, you know, very diet sanctions, let's call them. But, and everyone, you know, still thinks that he kind of went running for the hills when, you know, the NCAA suits were coming. And maybe he did. But, I mean, he probably saw this. Remember, he's an offensive guy. He looked at this squad, and the Eagles really courted him hard. This was their guy. This was Howie Roseman's guy, Jeffrey Lurie's guy. Conversely, Joe Banner, who just got let go by Jeff Lurie, who's in Cleveland, the president, he wanted him too. And, you know, there was kind of like, okay, which ego is going to win out? Because two egocentric guys, and, you know, one just fired the other and blah, 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 you know, Cleveland. You know, Chip Kelly then, when he changed his mind, whatever factor led to that, I mean – it's hard not to, you know, look at the Eagles and say this might be a real good situation because of the weapons they have on offense. They have speed. Chip Kelly loves speed. His offense is predicated on it, and he has a quarterback. And I know the big thing, and we talked about it for 5 months. Thank God the season finally got underway. But, you know, the quarterback competition, blah, blah, blah. Okay, to me, I've said this all along, he knew Mike was going to be his starting quarterback, but wanted to kind of, like, make him work for it a little bit. And he did. He won the job. I mean, short of imploding and turning the ball over four or five times in the preseason, it was going to be Vic's job. And he was stellar. He was phenomenal. He made the right reads, made the right calls. I won't say dumbed down, but they simplified the offense. As complicated as the offense is, it's kind of a simple the verbiage is simple. Chip Kelly kind of implements math into it, simple arithmetic, makes it easier for the quarterback. And I'm no way, shape, or form saying Mike Vick couldn't understand a more difficult offense, but for anybody, it's much simpler. The words are simpler. They hold up. It's really a different – it's been a phenomenon here in Philadelphia. They hold up pictures on the sideline when they send plays in. It's like Homer Simpson's one of them, a cheesesteak is another, Rocky Balboa. It's like this weird – he's got his whole way of doing things, and he's implemented a new diet system, and they all have – each player – has his own protein shake designed especially for his body type and his weight and his age. He gets his specific drink as he comes off the field, and they have to get 12 hours of sleep a night. And it's a whole different way of doing things. The culture has changed, and there's a different vibe in the locker room. It's fun now. The last 2 years were it was drab, it was stale. The player didn't really want to be there. The Andy Reid really crumbled fast, and And these guys, these weapons, they like getting out in space. They like getting the ball. And they're running the ball now, too, believe it or not. You would think with numbers like that and how they execute it with alacrity and precision and up-tempo, it would be a high-flying passing game. They ran the ball. Shady got the ball 31 times. And I think, what they run, 45 to 25, something like that. It was the most rushes for an Eagle team in any, more than any other game in the Andy Reid era the last 14 years in one night. And they put up 33 points very early. Again, they took the foot off the gas pedal, cost them a little bit. I think some of the players actually went to Chip Kelly. DeSean Jackson being one of them, said, hey, Chip, it's the NFL. Can't do that. You know, I'm sure he did it in a nice way, but, you know, he kind of like say, you know, this is a little different than when you're holding a, you know, 43-point lead in college, which you've been doing. NFL. These guys are all NFL players, and you saw what happened. You saw what happened. A couple turnovers. They weren't executing the offense, and the Skins came back. Give them credit because they were horrible in the first half, and they got it together a little bit, got the rust off, you know, made it a ballgame.
Yeah, they really did. They rallied. It seemed clear it wasn't going to be enough of a rally, and it wasn't, but they did come back. When you're talking about the Andy Reid death watch of the last couple of years, looking in that division there, that it probably bears the closest similarity to what's ongoing in Big D. Jason Garrett's got one more chance to get it done this year. New defense with Monty Kiffin bringing in his version of the cover two, so they're back to a 4-3 there as far as the implementation goes. Still an explosive offense and a lot of pieces there, but a franchise running back in DeMarco Murray that can't stay healthy, a quarterback in Tony Romo that appears to be the biggest choker in the league. So thoughts on this, how they looked week one. I mean, not surprising that they beat the Giants at home, except for the fact they've struggled to beat the Giants at home. But really, that's a game that they should win. I don't know that it necessarily tells us too much going forward. But, again, as a team that I've described the last couple of years as a collection of very talented players, much more so than a team, do you see that really changing in 2013?
Not too much, although every year I look at this team and I look at their roster and I don't quite understand what happens to this team, but there's something about their chemistry or makeup that they just don't have it, you know, the it factor, whatever that is, and you can say that about their quarterback because all things start with the quarterback in the National Football League, and he's one of the most prolific regular season guys around, you know, he just can't seem to get it done. When it counts, he had the fumble against Seattle. I get it. He had the bad interception last year at the end of the season against the Redskins. And I think that's weighing on Tony Romo. His only playoff win was against the Eagles a couple years back when they played him twice within a week. And you know what? They turned the ball over once last week to the Giants 6, and they only won by 5 points. You know, it's okay. We'll take it. You know, thank you for the 6 turnovers. Thank you for the 3 interceptions and the 3 fumbles. But we're only going to squeak this one out. You know, I know the Giants scored late and whatnot. Eli Manning, for that game, for 6 turnovers, his rating was like 102. Like, he still put up numbers, you know, for you fantasy guys out there. But the fact that they turned the ball over 6 times and squeaked by, you know, Witten's still getting it done. He had a couple touchdowns, and Romo didn't have a bad night himself. And, you know, like you said, Murray's a stud, but he can't stay on the field. You know, Miles Austin, you would think, was, you know, they have weapons. They have Dez Bryant, you know, banged up his foot. But, I mean, they have weapons out there, and you would think they'd be, and, you know, their coach, you know, former quarterback, you'd think they'd be more in sync, more prolific. At times, they look very good. But something happens towards the end of the year, because they usually get off to a real good start. Something happens along the way, you know, whether it's the defense breaking down or Romo, you know, kind of reverting to some of the things that he does. It's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't know if you read the clippings or hears all the criticism, but he seems to kind of really, because I still can't understand how some guys who've played 16 games, what, 15 games, played very well, and then all of a sudden, you know, they make the big, you know, like you said, the choke, you know, late in the season or in the playoffs, you know, and for my money, Peyton Manning, you know, hey, listen, God bless him. Does great things, you know, games 1 to 16. Not my guy. Won the postseason. He kind of does the same thing. To me, that's an unbelievable phenomenon. But Romo's kind of the same thing. And I keep thinking every year, it was a coincidence. It was a fluke, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you put 5-6 years together like that with only one playoff win, you start to think, you know, and I know Jerry Jones, you know, bucked him up, patched him up big time. And then he comes out with his comment saying, yeah, he's going to be more Peyton Manning-like in his preparation. You know, as if to say he hasn't been the guy who's been first, you know, in the parking lot, last out at night. You know, he needs to be, and whether that's a way of Jerry Jones motivating him or not, but I thought he made him look real bad. And, you know, and Jerry Jones never met a microphone he didn't like to put his mouth in front of. But I thought that was unwise to say. But it's just the truth. And, yeah, Romo's got to get his butt in there and, you know, be the Rich Gannon. You know what I mean? Be the Joe Montana. Be the guy. Be the Peyton Manning. Be the real student. Be the real player coach if he wants to take that next step to the next level.
Yeah, well, yeah, he may have had a point about Tony Romo, but I think Jerry Jones strikes me as the kind of guy who struggles to properly motivate his glasses wiper. So, you know, I don't know what he would have to say about such a thing there.
Jerry Jones, I think he's always been kind of a he's the guy who has the money, but I think he's always been the guy who actually wanted to be like the player or the coach or the guy who could really, you know, take the credit. Instead, he's kind of like the guy who writes the checks. And I know that was a big problem when Jimmy was there. He really wanted to take the credit for some of the moves that they made, some of the cuts that they made, the big trade, the big great train robbery with the Herschel Walker. And he would always – that was always a problem with those two, the egos, because Jimmy Johnson would do the things – and then Jerry Jones, the next day in the paper, would take the credit for it, and that became a problem. And it's a shame because those two together, if they could have kept their egos in check, could have, you know, won at least four straight. I know they won three or four in the early 90s, but who knows with the triplets and, you know, the way Jimmy Johnson was coaching, and they could have done the thing. Still did some things, yeah. But, again, it's a shame that, you know, if you're a Dallas fan, they haven't done anything since. So, you know, go figure.
Yeah, exactly. And, again, winning should have been enough. But it never was for Jerry Jones.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about, you know, right? And
yeah.
You know, it wasn't, apparently.
And winning has been too elusive for them there ever since. And speaking of winning, the team that Dallas played the other night, the New York Giants, again, just when you write them off, that's when they really seem to do it the last couple of years here. It's been the times when they've kind of worn out the public's patience with them, when they've looked to be a team with a bunch of underachievers. And yeah, they're almost at that point again, it seems like, although just when you start to think maybe this is the Giants' moment, maybe they have a chance to wriggle through this year like they did the last couple of times when we didn't see them coming, one wonders if that defense, and particularly the secondary, is going to be enough for them this time around. They can try and put on a decent pass rush. That's been a big key to what they've done the last couple of years. Offensively, they still have weapons in the wide receiving core, but a little bit of struggle now in the running game with David Wilson and the fumbleitis. So what's your sense about the Giants being a resurgent threat in the NFC this year?
You know, it's hard to tell because of that game the other night. Again, you know, I mean, Eli was still slinging it, and, you know, he still put up numbers, and the receiver, Cruz, again, the kid from Massachusetts had the breakout game against the Eagles, you know, a couple of years ago. He's coming out parties, turned into a real solid NFL player. It wasn't a one-hit wonder. Victor Cruz had three scores the other night. David Wilson, obviously, I think he's going to be fine. And I think the fact that, you know, they're trying to bring in Brandon Jacobs might help him, actually. You know, I know he got benched, and he fumbled the ball twice, you know, sitting on the bench. He had, like, 7 carries for 19 yards. He did nothing. I think he'll be okay. They don't have the pass rush that they had, and really, if you look back at the two Super Bowl runs, it was really their defense and their defensive ends. Remember that Umanyora, and the first time around they had Strahan. They got a lot of pressure on opposing quarterbacks, including Tom Brady. I mean, knocking off the Patriots twice in 4 years in the Super Bowl, that's impressive, and they still have Eli. And, you know, you can look at Eli and, you know, game to game, year to year, he had 25 picks a couple of years ago, led the league. And then, you know, towards the end of the year, they barely get in. They beat Dallas, you know, the last game of the season. And then they put it together. They're really, again, it's like this, what was that? You know, they're like an enigma a little bit. But if you look at it, it's pretty simple. Yeah, they affect the other quarterback and they protect their quarterback. And, you know, you have a guy like Eli, and I said this ad nauseum on the air, I would take him in a big game, to win a big game, or just a postseason. If you gave me the choice of him and his brother, I'd take Eli 8 days a week, twice on Sunday. Hey, you want to go 1-16, I'll take the other guy. He's phenomenal. He's my regular season guy, you know, but he can ride my bench when the postseason rolls around. Eli, all he does in the postseason is win. He's 8-3 in the postseason, and he wins on the road. And he comes out with big plays when he needs to, and he put up 2 game-winning drives to win 2 Super Bowls. That's quarterbacks make their bones. So when the money's on the line, Eli's your guy. He kind of straightens up, and again, you see the bad Eli, but you know when the pressure's on, you'll see the good Eli. And again, I like him. I didn't like him when he first came into the league. I thought he was, you know, he still looks like that 18-year-old kid, and that silly smirk. But you know, he's turned out to be a very solid quarterback, and he's a money player. I like him. I don't like their defense. I don't like their secondary. They're playing, you know, the Broncos this weekend. It's at home. But I think they're going to get abused this week. It's going to be a shootout, but I don't think they're going to come out on top this weekend.
I agree with you about Eli, and you look at it. The last two runs that they had, the winners of 2008 and 2012. You know, you could do worse for a theory than saying, "Gee, the guy is absolutely unstoppable after the Iowa caucuses," because the last two times around, he's just really gotten it done. So look out, 2016.
Yes, that's exactly right. And people laugh at me when I sit on the air, and they, you know, because they're still enamored with Peyton's, you know, his numbers. And hey, I get it. You want a fantasy team? Take Peyton. You want to win a Super Bowl? Take Eli. That's just the way it is. It's unbelievable that it has come to be that way. But you know, he did it once, and then he does it, you know, 5 years later. I guess it was two titles in 5 years, 8 and 12. Yeah. And he basically kind of did it the same way. You know, they were trailing most of the game, blah, blah, blah. He had a signature play, you know, the one to David Tyree in the first game, which was a lot of Eli. People forget Eli had to elude, like, you know, nine guys trying to tackle him before he made that throw. Game two, he hit Manningham down the sideline. Of course, Manningham makes an unbelievable catch, but that was Eli. Eli still had to go 50 more yards. And, you know, and then Bradshaw ends up punching it in, even though they told him not to, you know, score, but he ends up falling over the goal line anyway. And they win two Super Bowls, and that, you know, that's your guy. You know, Tom Coughlin, phenomenal job. I know his face is constantly red, and he's always mad at somebody or something, and, you know, he's always ready to quit or get fired. But, hey, two rings, I'll take them. I'll take Tom Coughlin. I think, you know, you get the good and the bad with the Giants, but two rings in that period of time, that's okay. If that was silly, man, Tom Coughlin would have statues. Statues. He'd be on top of buildings. He'd be like, his head would be on the skyline. You know, they're starving for something around here. So they're pretty pumped that Chip Kelly's around. But again, Tom Coughlin, phenomenal job.
Oh, he has done a great job. Yeah, two Super Bowls. That speaks for itself. The team that you saw Monday night playing your local Philadelphia Eagles there, Washington Redskins, the shock division champions of a year ago, being powered by RG3 to make that tremendous run that they went on. RG3, again, my theory on this has been that athletes, I think, are taking the wrong lesson from what happened with Adrian Peterson. I think it's becoming a macho kind of a thing now. I'm going to be ready on day one.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a mobile
kind of a
quarterback. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, he doesn't look like he's ready yet. And how could he be, realistically, as far as the rehabilitation schedule goes, to be the quarterback that he was last year with the legs? And we can discuss what the wisdom is of that approach anyways, because I don't think it's going to bode for a long career for him if he keeps playing in that style. But your thoughts on Washington, I mean, they looked like a team coming into the season that didn't seem poised to repeat from last year. Did anything Monday night that you saw change that opinion?
No. Again, I thought it kind of worked out for the Eagles that, listen, they won the division, and yes, he got hurt, and 8 months to the day was the surgery. And to me, that's pretty quick. He took no snaps in the preseason, and he looked it. And I don't know what everyone expected. He looked rusty to me, and the Eagles' defense was flying around. They made him more uncomfortable than he probably was. And to me, the Skins looked ill-prepared. One, they weren't prepared for that offense, which is somewhat understandable. You know, there was no NFL tape of that yet. The only thing that Haslett could do was look at tape of, you know, Chip Kelly at Oregon. But they looked ill-prepared. They looked like they had no idea what hit them. You know, Alfred Morris fumbles the first play from scrimmage that they had the ball. Remember, the Eagles ran 18 plays before the Skins ran a play, and they trailed 7-3 because D'Angelo Hall ran that lateral back. But the first time they touch the ball, bing, fumble, turns into points for the Eagles. The next time they get the ball, four plays later, Griffin throws a pick. They threw it in like triple coverage. You know, they looked very out of sync. And that, you know, got to give credit to some of that credit to the Eagles for making them look that way. Then the Eagles, again, pulled back a little bit. The Skins kind of got their got their thing together a little bit, and Griffin started to feel a little bit more comfortable, and the Eagles kind of dropped back into a prevent, which we all know what happens when you do that. And they, you know, were aided by a turnover, the Jason Avant fumble. And hard to say because of what hit them on Monday night, but, you know, I don't think they have the weapons to compete necessarily in the NFC East, especially with the Eagles, the resurgence of them. And, you know, we talked about the weapons of Dallas and the Giants have. You know, again, a lot of it comes down to the quarterback. We'll see how RG3 does if he can stay healthy. Besides the knee, like you said, he plays a little bit like, you know, the risky running style. And I'm sure they're telling him, hey, you know, yeah, remember he got a concussion. Weatherspoon, you know, drilled him in the game, I think early in the season last year. Can't do that. That's the biggest criticism of Michael Vick. Not about his, you know, reading defenses or pre-snap read. It's that he won't slide. And apparently he can't. It's another phenomenon. It's an enigma in this town that he can't hook slide. And yeah, you got to do that. And I'm sure they're telling RG3, hey, we need you on the field. You know, if you have an opportunity, fine, get down. You know, the Isaac Holt used to get down. Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, Marvin Harris. No shame in that. Extend the career, extend the play, extend your livelihood. It's okay to get down. You know, it's a business decision. You know, get out of bounds. You know, slide. The play is dead when a quarterback begins his slide. You know, if you give yourself up. Michael Vick can't do it, and he still insists on taking unnecessary hits. And again, I mean, no one thinks he's going to last 16 games. We shall see.
Yeah, and that seems like a pretty good bet at this point in time. As far as what he was facing on Monday night, when you look at Philadelphia, we talked extensively about the offense previously, and that's going to be the signature aspect of Chip Kelly's tenure.
Sure.
In Philadelphia, and yet this team's only going to go as far as the defense lets them, because that's the difference right there between if the defense can be even solid, this could be a Super Bowl contender, assuming that the league doesn't adjust to the offense overnight, which typically the league doesn't adjust that quickly. But the defense,
right,
there's been a lot of qualms about what it was going to look like, and yet the dream team of the last 2 years was one of the biggest turd underachievers we've seen in a long time here. So, you know, we've seen it before. You know, like the New York Rangers, once the salary cap era hit, and all of a sudden they're going with younger, hungrier guys and looking better. Could
sure.
the same thing be in store here for the Eagles now that the quote-unquote dream team has been broken up?
Very possibly. Very possibly. You mentioned the defense. I mean, you know, we haven't even touched on the defense, and you're very right about that. The team, first of all, they play with energy, okay? And that's the thing that gets overlooked or did get overlooked. It wasn't all about the schemes, the play designs, and they were all very fascinating to break down, and we all had fun doing it. But they play with energy. And, again, sometimes you can't account for emotion. You know, when one team is really flying around and knocking folks out and putting hats on people and with that intensity, you know, you can back another team down. And, you know, if you're not ready for it, you know, you can kind of sway momentum in your face. And that's what the Eagles did. That's what Chip Kelly was most happy about at the end of the game, was they played with energy. They played hard. Good things are going to happen. It was so evident after watching that game that they gave up the last two seasons probably midway through, because, it was dragged. There was no emotion, and football has to be played with emotion. It's a collision sport. It's a high-flying, violent sport, and you really have to, you know, have your head in the game, and you really have to kind of be hungrier than the other guy. And that's an intangible, but for the first time in a long time, the Eagles had it. And to a man, I mean, you wouldn't believe the smiles in the locker room after the game, and we hadn't seen that in so long, and they were just having fun. It's fun again. And the defense was certainly a surprise. I mean, everyone's saying Trent Cole might not even make the team. You know, he had a bad year last year. Now he's asked to drop back into a 3-4 and cover some tight ends. And basically what he was doing is knocking folks down in the first 5 yards, because he knew if he'd get by the 5-yard line, a 5-yard mark, he wasn't going to be able to hang. So he was just blowing up people. He was breaking through double teams. He caused that fumble on Morris on the first play from scrimmage for the Skins. And they did enough. Let's put it this way. They're going to have to score points to win games this year, and the defense is going to have to do just enough. They only had 13 takeaways last year. They had 3 on Monday night. That's been their biggest problem. They were a turnover machine, and they had no playmakers on defense. They had a little bit of that the other night. They still turned the ball over twice, but they had 3 takeaways, led to points. Again, got to make plays on defense. You got to fly around the ball, and you got to have enthusiasm and energy. And they did that. I would like to see more of what we saw for two quarters, and I'd like to see them play a full four quarters at that level, at that tempo, to really see what this is about. You know, because, you know, again, I mean, it was more about – it wasn't more about dominant physical dominance. It was more about confusion. And the way it's designed is you can run three, four plays in a row that are basically the same base play that have three or four options to it. So when Chip Kelly calls a play, he doesn't exactly know how it's going to end up. It's Michael Vick's job to see, to read and react, and then to, you know, to design the play or to execute the play the way it's read. And he did a good job of it the other night. But watch the tape, the game tape, and how it was broken down. The Redskins were confused, and their reads were wrong. And that's because Chip Kelly was, you know, it was by design. He did a lot of disguising. So the reads, it was confusing for a defense. I mean, they'd be going one way, and then LeSean McCoy had a hole, you know, 18 yards wide. And, you know, with McCoy, you know, give him the ball, and he gave him the ball 31 times. It was 1 yard short of his career, you know, high. And he just, you know, you get these guys in space, and that's really the key. And he did a lot of that at Oregon. If you watch Oregon games, you go, hey, where did he come from? There's no other defender in the screen, just a little shallow cross or a bubble screen. They love the bubble screen. You know, and in a lot of ways, it's very simple. You know, Chip Kelly's like, hey, big guys beat up little guys, so he wants to recruit and, you know, draft big guys, you know, on the line, on both sides of the line. And he just plays a math game. You know, okay, if I put three guys here, two out in front, when I see two guys over there just to defend, that's going to work in my favor. I got three guys versus two. Very simple in its base form, but kind of brilliantly designed because no one has really thought up a way to run this or to stop it. And I think it's going to, you know, cause a lot of problems when teams have to play the Eagles on short rest, like, you know, Andy Reid will and his team, you know, next Thursday night.
Yeah, it's fascinating because, again, people have theorized for a long time that you won't have the big speed imbalance at the pro game that he had at Oregon. So, again, there's going to be that. There's going to be adjustments by the defense. It's a constant cycle in the league between innovation and adjustment to it. So we'll have to see how it goes along. But as of right now, certainly one of the most fascinating stories in the league and certainly in that division, and fuel for a great conversation with you, as always, Joe Stazek. A real pleasure to have you on, my friend, and I hope to catch up with you again before too long because, again, this story is going to remain fascinating and your ability to talk about it every bit as much. So thank you so much for being a part of the conversation today, Joe.
Well, Rick, always a pleasure, my friend. You have my number. I'm always, you know, ready to rock and roll, and, you know, we'll see. I think this story is just going to keep getting better as we go, and you know, it's a team filled with drama. It's, you know, a soap opera team. So, you know, we'll see how it goes on. But I appreciate it, and great talking to you again, pal.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Joe. Great to have you on, as always. And thank you all for tuning in to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 308.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.